This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Tonight we are discussing, it's interesting how Jewish history is the same pretty much. It goes through the same phases. Nothing's really changed. Nothing massive really changes. The last big change was, of course, the State of Israel, Baruch Hashem, the State of Israel. The gathering of the exiles, that's a big thing that changed. But we're still going through the same struggles. Anti-Semitism and violence and wars and persecution. All these things are happening around us today. We have hostages. The hostages are incarcerated in somewhere, in some cave somewhere underground. And Bezrat Hashem, things will go well, Bezrat Hashem, for all of us and for all our hostages. And hostages should be freed speedily in our day, just like it's Yom Yisrael. I want to compare the events today. It's amazing how the whole dor vador in every generation, they try and kill us, they try and get rid of us, and somehow Hashem saves us. And we're going to see this Bezrat Hashem speedily in our days as well. We'll see Hashem's mighty hand. So I want to tie in the events of Purim, and we talked about Purim, we talked about Egypt, coming out of Egypt, the Yom Yisrael, and the events today. I'm going to try and tie it all together. It should be Le'ilui Nishmat Meir. Aliyah for his soul. So when we read the Exodus story in the Torah, one of the most interesting items that punctuates every stage of the drama is the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. He intellectually, he wants to let the Jews go. He wants to throw them out. They're causing trouble. He's getting all these plagues. And every time he hardens his heart, every single time he hardens his heart, Hashem hardens his heart, he hardens his heart. And as soon as Pharaoh's head tells him he ought to accede to the request of Moshe and Aaron, and there's an intervention by God, Pharaoh's heart tightens up again. He reneges on his compromise and stands firm. Again and again, we come across this phenomenon. And we're seeing this today again in negotiations with Hamas. Yimach Shemam Zichram, that they harden their heart. Every time there's some kind of way of breaking the deadlock, the Americans are trying, the Qatarians are trying, I don't know how they're trying, but they're trying, the Egyptians are trying. But you know what? Every time Hashem hardens his heart, Sinwar's heart gets hardened, and he says no. And every time we think he's going to say yes, and he says no. Right now, they're still negotiating, trying to get 40 people out, 40 people alive, out of 120 or so left. And every time he says no, he says no. He hardens his heart. So we read the Haggadah. It's interesting. This aspect is missing from the Haggadah. This idea that Pharaoh's heart was hardened, which is so critical to the story, to understand the story, we don't see this in the Haggadah. The Haggadah is missing this event. There's no mention at all in the Haggadah of Pharaoh's heart. And the second thing that is missing in the Haggadah, it's interesting, is the word Moshe. We don't mention our hero. The hero of the whole event was Moshe Rabbeinu, our rabbi, our leader, Moses, who took us out of Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the Haggadah, which is two interesting facts. If you look at the Haggadah, you see a lot of things in the Haggadah, then you got to focus on what's missing from the Haggadah. What's missing is this idea that Pharaoh's heart was hardened. And number two, Moses, the hero of the whole event. He was the one who caused all these issues, led the Jews out of Mitzrayim, single-handedly spoke to Hashem, was our interlocutor with Hashem, and his name is missing from the Haggadah. So we have to talk about tonight, what's going on in the Haggadah? Why are these things missing? And that's how we're going to tie this into the events today. Moshe's name is missing. Why is it missing? So a very simple answer. And the answer is we're not focusing this night on Moses, on Moshe. The night of Seder night is focused on Hashem, the hero of the story. We raise our cups of wine. We say, Kibyachol, L'chaim to Hashem. Hashem does not need a L'chaim. He's alive all the time. But we're raising our cups in gratitude to God. Four cups of wine, raising the four cups of wine to God. We don't find this anywhere else. Four cups of wine, raising the wine cups to Hashem. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And if Hashem would not have taken us out, we and our children's children will still be there today. What does that mean? Very simply, would be assimilated into Egypt. We would be Egyptians. All of us would have been Egyptians today. And Hashem took us out. So who is the hero of the story? It's not Moshe Rabbeinu. It's God himself. Hashem himself is the hero. That's what we focus on Seder. And we have to remember this very critical. And we have to remember that Hashem is the one who we focus on Seder night. We don't focus on Moses. We don't focus on Aaron. We don't focus on anyone else. We focus on the hero. The true hero is our God. Our God in heaven is our true hero. And he cares for us and he will redeem us in the future and all the redemptions we're going to talk about. Now, what's also interesting is I call the Seder night Jewish history encapsulated in one night. One night of Jewish history around the table. It's enjoyable. We have a family. We're celebrating. And yet, Jewish history has ups and downs. And in the Haggadah story, we have ups and downs. We have servitude. We have idolatry. We have freedom. We have religious freedom. And we also talk about the cups of wine as celebration, but the maror is bitterness. So we have both the bitterness and the rejoicing. We have bitterness and rejoicing. That's Jewish life. Jewish life is, Jewish history is exactly what Seder night is all about. It's remembering events that happened 33 or 3400 years ago and finding meaning in today's events through those events, because it's the same story. Every time, in every generation, the story is repeated over and over again. We've seen it so many times. In my short life, I've seen it so many times. And we're seeing it again today. But what's interesting to note is to remember that the Seder night is all about rejoicing, cups of wine, rejoicing. And then we have matzah, which represents slavery. And then we have matzah, which represents freedom as well, because they didn't have time for the dough to rise when they left Egypt. So we have all these events, freedom, slavery, rejoicing, servitude, good, bad, rejoicing, and upset. Everything in that one night. Everything is one night. It's one cycle. And that's the cycle of Jewish history. The cycle of Jewish history encapsulates these events, happiness and joy. All of a sudden, look how the anti-Semitism, all of a sudden, it blew up. It blew up out of nowhere, right? And it seems like out of nowhere, it came out of nowhere. All the college campuses around the world and massive hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating in London and Paris and New York and all these places. Where they come from, all of a sudden, it's Jewish history. This is Jewish history. In every generation, they want to destroy us. Every single generation, they want to destroy us. And Hashem will, in turn, we're going to see whatever they want to do to us is going to happen to them. And we're going to see this. And that's why Hashem hardens their hearts. And Hashem hardens the heart of Pharaoh. We're seeing this in our story today. Khamenei's heart is going to be hardened. Sinwar's heart is already hardened. And Hezbollah, Yimach Shemam, all these enemies, all their hearts are hardened. And one day we're going to see the ending of them is because they hardened their hearts. If they would have been soft and sweet and gentle, they'd be fine. But every time they harden their hearts, that's the secret of destruction. The secret of destruction is the hardening of their heart. So why? How come the Haggadah doesn't talk about it? How come the Haggadah misses this important fact that Hashem hardened Pharaoh's heart? So it's interesting because there's a very fundamental idea of the Seder night. The fundamental idea of the Seder night is all about education. The Seder night is all about education. Why? It says, Oman Tzaper, that you should tell this story to your children, or Ben Bincha, and your children's children. Thank God I can fulfill this today. We have children and grandchildren around the table. Bezrat Hashem, by everyone around here who's coming, listening to this class, everyone should fulfill this Bezrat Hashem one day. The children's children. Hashem says that you saw me. I played around with Egypt. I played around with them like little pieces, chess pieces. And you will know that I am Hashem. So Hashem is telling us this story. It's all about learning the story about Mitzrayim. Why? It's an educational experience for Jewish life, for our children, our children's children, for all generations. That Hashem is going to play with all our enemies and eventually destroy them as well. Just like Pharaoh was totally destroyed, that Hashem will play with them as if, cat and mouse. And they seem to be successful. We don't know the whole story. Hashem is just playing behind the scenes until finally we see the final episode. Bezrat Hashem will all see this final episode soon, very soon. Bezrat Hashem in a good way. So this tension in the story of Mitzrayim. Now it's interesting because the Jewish people were not told this very important fact. This was a secret conversation between God and Moshe. Hashem tells Moshe, Pharaoh, I'm going to harden his heart. He's going to tell you no. And we don't find Moshe ever telling the Jewish people this. until he wrote it down in the Torah, after the Jews came out of Egypt, they didn't know the story. They didn't know the background of the story. Hashem is predicting and telling Moshe in great detail, he's not going to send you out. None of the plagues are going to affect him. Until the final plague, Pharaoh is not going to rethink. Pharaoh is not going to send you out. What's that purpose of that? Why was that kept secret? Why is this fact that Hashem hardened Pharaoh's heart every time he's going to turn us down kept secret? And the answer was to build up tremendous tension. You know, in Israel right now, there's tremendous tension because the people, especially the families, the poor families of the hostages, are hot. I can't even imagine what they're going through hell. They're going through hell. And 106 months already, these guys have been in the underground, tortured. Who knows what? They're still alive. We don't know anything about what's going on right now. And I can't imagine what it's like to be a father or a mother or a sister or a brother or a child of these hostages, what's going on in their mind. We have to really have to think about it and be conscious of this and be more aware of it. It's a torture. It's a torture for the families. You know, it says the Iranians, they arrange for a florist to send one of these hostage families a wreath of flowers. I mean, have you ever seen more torture than that? It's like the florist didn't know where it's coming from. And the florist sent the flowers to the family, and it was like a knife in their heart. And he's sending them a wreath of condolences for their daughter, who they thought, you know, maybe she's still alive. She's a prisoner, hostage. Anyway, so this is the tension in this story. No one knows what's going on. Moshe does not tell the people, don't worry, Pharaoh's going to say no. He doesn't say it. The people don't know. Why is Pharaoh saying no all the time? We're going out. We're not going out. Change his mind. Every time the tension is building up. Why is that tension so high? Because Hashem wants us to remember that story. Why? Because when they remember that tension, they're going to relate the story to their children with much more emphasis. And much more courage. And they're gonna illustrate the story and capture the story. It's a tense situation. You have to remember the tense situation in Mitzrayim. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what Pharaoh is going to decide. We have no idea. They don't have the background information. That somehow Moshe Rabbeinu did not tell them this background information. And it's also missing from the Haggadah. This tension, this state of mind, this the fact that Hashem is pulling the strings and hardening Pharaoh's heart was not told. And that's the reason why is this tension had to be elevated. And today we have these modern day pharaohs. The modern day pharaohs, I can also explain the omission of the hardening of Pharaoh's heart with the Haggadah. The reason is because since it happened to Pharaoh of the Exodus, it has not stopped happening to every pharaoh. All our enemies are miniature pharaohs. They're all pharaohs in a sense. All the pharaohs we had to meet and face in the course of Jewish history. It is no longer a novelty. It is no longer purely a Pesach event. For 3,500 years, Pharaoh's heart has not been softened. His stubbornness has not changed. His malice and evilness has not abated. If anything, he talks even tougher today. The pharaohs of today talk even tougher. Pharaoh wanted to keep us as slaves. They want to destroy us. The Iranians want to destroy us completely. This is why there is no mention of it in Haggadah. It is too ordinary, too everyday, too prosaic. So we have Iran, you have Hezbollah, you have Hamas, you have Houthis, and I don't know who else, the Iraqi Hezbollah, and Syrian Hezbollah, I don't know. The living memory of most of us, this has happened already several times. To quote but a few instances, now this is just before I was born. When Mr. Bevin was Prime Minister of England, actually he was the Foreign Minister, he refused stubbornly to issue another 100,000 visas to Jewish survivors of the Holocaust. He refused to give visas to come to Israel for the survivors of the Holocaust. This hardening of his heart ensured the creation of the state of Israel. If he wouldn't have been so stubborn, the Jews would not have pushed so hard for a state. In 1967, the Arabs, the Egyptians, the Syrians, the Jordanians, etc., etc., the little king of Jordan was privately told by Israeli prime minister, "You keep out of this battle, and we will not touch you." But his arrogant heart hardened. He joined the fray. And that is how we are in possession of Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, the whole of Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount, including the Kotel. But because Hashem hardened his heart. If the Hashem would not have hardened the king of Jordan's heart, we probably wouldn't have left it partitioned. We left the Jerusalem partition today and the West Bank would be still part of Jordan. So the Haggadah need not mention something which is a perennial aspect of Jewish history. We have Nasser in 67, we had Saddam Hussein, and all these guys are gone, all these modern pharaohs. I believe there's one answer for both these questions. Why did Moshe keep the secret? And why the Haggadah omits the story? And one of the questions we have is, the Mishnah says, on the asking of the questions and answers, we read, "Kan haben shoel aviv," and here, the son asks his father, "Manishtana." "V'mein dab ben," and if the son has no brains to ask questions, original questions, his father has to teach him the questions. And according to the intelligence of the child, that is how the father teaches the questions. Now, this is interesting because we see education is according to the intelligence of the child. And how do we educate children? We teach them how to ask questions. What's interesting about Judaism is it's really a religion of questions. If you learn Talmud, you open up Talmud, the first line in Talmud is a question. Everything is all questions, questions, answers, questions. We're trying to arouse curiosity. The way to teach someone is through curiosity. First, they ask questions and we can answer them. If they don't ask questions, they don't want to know. If they don't want to know, you're really force-feeding people information, and that's not going to help much. So first, get people interested. You first get the kids interested. Do strange things around the Seder table. This is what we do. We dip the bitter herbs. We get the celery and we dip it in the salt water. And the reason is we want the kids to ask questions. We have all sorts of things on the table, strange things. It's for the kids to ask questions. We do all kinds of strange things during the Seder. The kids to ask questions. We want kids to ask questions. We want them, their curiosity to be aroused. Because if you want to teach someone, the best way of teaching them is if they themselves ask the questions. And then you can answer their questions. And then they'll be interested to learn. But not just by force feeding. That's not the way to teach. So it's interesting. A secret of the Haggadah and the Seder night is education. Now, how do you educate? So the Haggadah says, at the time where they can see things, they can feel, touch. There's a museum, one of my favorite museums for kids in Philadelphia, was the Please Touch Museum. It's a museum for kids, and it has all different demonstrations and models that kids themselves can go in and touch and feel and see how things work. There's a train and there's a bus and this, and the kids go in, they can sit behind the wheel, turn the wheel. They can really, this feel, it's called the Field and Touch Museum in Philadelphia. And that's what Pesach night, that's what Seder night is all about. You can see the food that our forefathers ate in Egypt, the matzah. You can feel the bitterness through the taste of the maror. You can feel the bricks they built through the harosim. It's a please touch and eat and taste exhibition. Seder night is a par excellence, is a night of getting Jewish history through to our children with all the props around them, with all the props. And the way to do it is by them asking questions. So it's interesting because we have to teach our children. How do we teach our children? By teaching them how to ask questions. And so if the son is very simple, like a tam, one of the sons in the Pesach Seder story, Haggadah, is a tam, the simpleton, the father teaches the son a simple question. Mazot, what is this? And then the father teaches his son, oh, you asked the question, I'm going to give you the answer. What is the answer to the simple question? Ki biyad chazaka, hotziyanu Hashem b'Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Egypt with a strong arm. Hashem took us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And that's a strong arm. Don't take it literally. Hashem has no hands and no arms. But it's a metaphor. That's a metaphor. Hashem took us out of Egypt with mighty wonders and miracles. That's the strong arm of Hashem. And that's how we teach our children. They ask questions, we answer the questions according to their intellectual capacity. The wise son, that's interesting, the Chacham, knows this too. He knows. He recites the Haggadah too, but it goes beyond the Haggadah. He knows that all this is simply the consequence. The main act of the story is divine providence. The main hero of the story is Hashem, and Hashem hardened Pharaoh's heart so that the miracle will be even bigger. Hashem works through individuals in his own invisible and quiet fashion. And therefore, the answer to the wise son's question is, now this is a strange answer. Think about this answer we give to the wise son in the Haggadah. Ein maftirin achar ha-Pesach afikoman. What does that mean? One is not allowed to eat dessert. Now, afikoman, people don't realize, is word for dessert. Afikuman, take out the man, take out the dessert. Afikuman is dessert. We don't eat anything after dessert. Our dessert, afikuman, is instead of the Korban Pesach. You're not allowed to eat anything after Korban Pesach. So a person should leave the taste of the Korban Pesach in their mouth when they go to sleep. So this matzah today, we have, instead of Korban Pesach, the afikuman, the taste of this matzah must be on our mouth, in our mouths. In order to drink a cup of coffee, cup of tea, after the afikoman, leave that taste of the matzah in your mouth when you go to sleep. What's the reason for that? This is the halakha we teach the wise son. This is what we tell the wise son when he asks his question. Why? Because the taste of the Pesach sacrifice, the essence of the Exodus story, which was we must remain after all else is forgotten. Everything else can be forgotten. Just remember the essence of the Pesach story. What is the essence of the Pesach story? Hashem is the one who redeems. He works in mysterious ways, which are sometimes paradoxical, and seem to go in wrong directions. And Hashem's ways are surprising but certain. And this is something we have to remember. We have to have emunah in God's ways. We don't know what's happening around us. It's a crazy society right now. We're going through crazy times. But the truth is, we've been through this before. We've been through pharaohs. We've been through Nasser. We've been through Ahmadinejad. We've been through all these guys. We survived. Somehow we survived and we celebrate. And that's what's going to happen again. It's just unfortunate that we have all these korbanot. We have all these people missing, unfortunately. And Bezrat Hashem, Hashem should do miracles and get them out as well. So why did Moshe keep it secret? Why is there no mention of it in the Haggadah? Because most people are in the category of the Tam, the simple son. What does that mean? You know, all of us, we're very intellectual, we're very smart. To say that we are Tam is a real insult. But the truth is, there's different kinds of Tam. There's a Tam who does not understand Hashem's providence. That's a Tam. The simple son does not understand God's providence. God's providence does not work in a straight line. We have to remember this. Hashem's providence does not work in a straight line. It's like the stock market. It doesn't go up in straight lines. It goes up and then down. It goes up and then down. It goes up. Hopefully it goes up more than it goes down. Hashem's providence does not work in straight lines. And that was the lesson Hashem gave to Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, take your stick at the burning bush. He says, take your stick, throw it on the ground, and it turns into a snake. It says Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from the snake. He was scared. What is the symbolism of the stick turning into a snake? And the answer is Hashem is telling Moshe a very important lesson. Moshe Rabbeinu was very direct in his actions. He saw an Egyptian hitting a Jew. He does takes remedial action. He sees two Jewish brothers fighting and he takes remedial action. He sees the shepherds persecuting the daughters of Yitro, of Jethro. He takes remedial action. He's like a stick, direct. Moshe Rabbeinu goes directly and gets involved and tries to solve the problem directly. Hashem tells Moshe, he says, Moshe asks God, he says, what are you doing? The people are crying, they're being persecuted. Do something. Hashem takes your stick and throw it on the floor. And the stick turns into a snake. Hashem says, I'll teach you a lesson, Moshe. I don't operate like you. I don't go into this world in a direct fashion. I go like a snake. I go in a very critical. You can't even figure out which way is the snake going. Where is the snake going? It's going this way, it's going that way. Where is he going to finally see his destination? You can't figure out which way is Hashem going. We know the destination, but we don't know how that he's going to get to that destination. Well, here we are. We're getting closer and closer to the destination. This is amazing. I'm living in Eretz Israel, in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. I'm living, well, basically walking distance to the Kotel. If you want to walk like an hour or so, I can walk to the Kotel. And I still don't know. What is Hashem getting at? When is the redemption coming? Where is the Messiah? I don't know. I can see that it's going in this direction. But Hashem does it in a way that you can't figure it out. You just have to believe that this is going to be the end and wait for it to play out. Because if you're looking at the events, you'll never be able to figure them out. That's the way Hashem works. And that's what Hashem taught Moshe at the burning bush with the snake. The stick, the direct approach, that's not my approach, Hashem says. Throw your stick on the ground. It's not going to be a direct approach. It's going to be a going up and going down like the stock market approach. And you're going to see the eventually you're going to see my hand. Then you're going to understand everything. That's what history, that's what especially Jewish history is all about. Jewish history is all about the ups and downs, the celebrations of the four cups of wine, the maror, the bitterness of the maror, and the grit of the haroset, of the bricks, and the hard servitude. That's Jewish history. And Bezrat Hashem, we will see more of the wine, we'll see more of the celebration part of Jewish history. We should see it speedily nowadays, more of the celebrations of Jewish history and not the bitterness of Jewish history. So this is very interesting. And we should pass this message down to our children's children's children, not just the message of the Dam that got to exile in Egypt. No, we also have to teach them. We can't see how God works in history. We can't understand. We have to have faith that God is there out, looking out for us. He has our back, even though sometimes it doesn't work all the time, but eventually we survive. Guaranteed survival. We are guaranteed true survival. It's the promise that God gave to Abraham Avinu, our forefather, and the Brit Ben Abitarim and the covenant of the pieces. I will take them out. They'll be slaves in a foreign land. I will take them out. God guarantees eventually redemption. We have to read. So the simple son panics quickly. He sees plots, assigns blame all at once. The wise son is never hysterical. The wise son, the Hacham, is possessed of an inner calm and equanimity because he knows Hashem works in very strange worldly ways, but eventually the redemption will come. Similarly, the wise son of our times will understand that the hardening of Sinwar's heart and the hardening of Khomeini's heart and the hardening of the other guys, all these guys, Nasrallah and all these guys, and the Houthis or whatever it is, an act of God. It's an act of God. Hashem is hardening their heart. He will be proud of Israel today. Israel is a small nation that has confirmed the honor of all small people, whether they know it or not, whether they appreciate it or not. It is a small nation. It has stood firm on principle, refused to be bullied by hard-hearted the Pharaoh. The wise son will see events about time in the perspective of the Afikoman. The essence is that it is ultimately Hashem directs the events of a person. He directs the events of people, and he does so in such mysterious ways. And every generation, every generation, the nations try to kill us, but we have to know that we will survive. Israel Hashem, we will survive. So Hag HaMatzot, the festival of Matzah, is the time of our redemption. Israel Hashem, this will also be a festival of our redemption. We call it Zman Chirutenu, the festival of Chirut, the festival of freedom. We have to talk about more about this word. Chirut is a very important word, but not this is not the time. Zman Chirutenu is the time of our freedom. Freedom comes and freedom goes. Freedom can never be taken for granted. It is something which, once achieved, is never forever certain, never safe, never secure. It requires constant struggle. Judaism endorses the American revolutionary slogan, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, and this is our motto as well. We have to remember that. Freedom is not something we take for granted. Freedom is something we have to always look and try and get, fight for. All of Jewish history, in a manner of speaking, a long record of freedom lost and freedom regained. A drama of galut, of exile, and a drama of redemption. Of chirut, of freedom, and of freedom and slavery. It is as if Jewish history were really a large Seder table, where sometimes we drink the four cups, celebrating freedom, and then bits bite into the bitter herbs of the maror and experience the agony of subjugation. Where now we practice heseva, which is leaning, which is a sign of freedom, and then the humiliation of the haroset of the bricks and mortar of slavery. Sometimes, perhaps most times, life is more like a matzah. The matzah is a peculiar, paradoxical blending of both motives. Of freedom, the matzah of freedom is a sign of the bread that did not rise when they were in a hurry to leave Egypt, and the bread of affliction, bread of slavery. We may perhaps find a wise insight the rabbis. The rabbis gave a beautiful insight, beautiful symbol. The Mishnah tells us there were five unusual characteristics of the fire on the altar. There were five unusual characteristics of the fire on the altar. Amazing. This is amazing. One of the qualities was, it was like Rebutzah Ka'ari. The Gemara says, Rebutzah Ka'ari has seen the fire on the altar, seemed to crouch like a lion. It was in the shape of a lion. This is wild. The fire on the altar was in the shape of a lion. The Talmud in Yoma 21b comments on this. It says, can you say that the fire was in the shape of a lion? But Tanya, we learned in a brighter. Amar Rabbi Hanina, Sgana Kohanim, Rabbi Hanina, who is the assistant Kohen Gadol in the second temple period, says, I saw it, Rebutzaka Kedef. The fire was in the shape of a dog. Not in the shape of a lion, it was in the shape of a dog. The Talmud says, you're right. They're both right. Why? In the first temple period, the fire on the altar was in the shape of a lion. In the second temple period, the fire on the altar was in the shape of a dog. What is going on? What is this fire? What is the shape of a dog or shape of a lion? And the answer is symbolism. A lion is not afraid of resistance. A lion knows what it wants and will fight for his vital needs. He may suffer defeat. He will lick his wounds, but never will the lion bow. In that case, he never begs for his wants. The lion loves freedom. Better freedom alone in the desert, hungry and thirsty, than mountains of meat in a posh cage. The dog, however, places no value on freedom. The dog seeks only to survive and eat. Not only does he not cherish freedom, he rejects it. He's always looking for a master. The dog is always looking for a master, someone to please, someone with whom to ingratiate himself, someone who can serve faithfully and thus get his reward, a bone from the table. He will even prefer a merciless beating in his master's house to being on his own. And if expelled, will return over and over again. Our first commonwealth, which started in the book of Joshua, Yahushua, the student of Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, lasted all the way to the exile in Babylon, about 1,000 years. Our first commonwealth was about 1,000 years. It was a period of the lion in Jewish history. That's when the shape of the fire on the altar was the shape of a lion. It began with the conquest of Canaan by Joshua, and the Israelites went through the period of monarchy, King Saul, King David, King Solomon, and their followers. The building of the first temple until the defeat of the Israelites and the exile under Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. This was a colorful, if uncertain, period in Jewish history. There were many defeats as well as triumphs, moral backsliding as well as spiritual attainments. But above all, there were about 1,000 glorious years of proud and dignified national statehood. The fire on the altar was the Rebutzah Ha'ari. Fire was in the shape of the lion because we were like lions. We were willing to fight for our freedom. The second commonwealth was the era of the Kelev, the dog. The Jews came back from Babylon. They came back from Persia after the story of Purim. Queen Esther's son was now the king. He let them go back and build the temple, the second temple. But it was under the Persians. The Persians were the rulers. They were the main rulers. We had to pay taxes to the Persians. And eventually we were conquered again by the Greeks, by the great Alexander the Great, and eventually by the Syrian Greeks, Antiochus, we know the story, eventually by Ptolemy of Egypt, and then eventually by the Romans. So the second temple, where we are, we was always under other people. We were never free. It was never a free commonwealth like the first commonwealth. The fire on the altar was like the shape of a dog. Because that's how we reacted with the world. We acted like dogs. We acted like a dog with a master. You send us bones, we'll eat the bones. We're not going to rebel. And when we tried to rebel, we were crushed terribly. We were destroyed. We decimated. The Romans destroyed us. They decimated us. It was worse than the Holocaust in terms of percentages. And we learned we were like dogs. We were like beaten dogs all the time. So interesting, the first commonwealth, we're like Rebutzah Ka'ari, the fire on the altar was like a lion. Second was like a dog. The second commonwealth was the era of the dog. The return to Palestine was not precipitated by our own determination and resolve, but by the grace of the Persian Emperor Cyrus. By the way, Palestine never existed in the second temple or the first temple. Palestine was coined by the Romans. The word Palestine was coined by the Romans after they destroyed us. After they destroyed our temple, then they coined this word Palestinia. They didn't want to mention Israel anymore. They wanted to wipe Israel off the map. This is similar to what they want to do today. Wipe Israel off the map. And the Romans gave this name Palestine, but really it's based on probably on the Philistines. The Philistines, they were inhabitants of the coastal area, the Gaza, interesting. The Gaza area, that's the Philistines. Those are the Philistines. Probably that's where the Romans got their name Palestine from. Anyway, it's interesting to know that Jewish history just keeps on repeating itself. We go through these periods of might and lions. We go through periods of dogs. We go through a period of lions and dogs and lions and dogs. And Bezrat Hashem, in the period of lions, now Bezrat Hashem, we have to fight for our freedom. We have to fight our heroes, the ones who, you know, fought in the battles. And you see the Israeli soldiers, they're heroes. They're amazing heroes. They're brave. They go underground. They go in these tunnels and they go overground. They go in the air. They go in the sea. They're all over. The Baruch Hashem. We're blessed. This is the period of lions. So the period of lions is, there's Radishim, there's another period of lions we're going through now. So I believe that both themes can be detected in the story of the Exodus from Egypt itself. The Exodus represents an oscillation between the lion and the dog. In the beginning, when the Israelites left Egypt, they left with their heads held high. They went out b'yad ramah. They went out with a strong arm, with a mighty arm. With their heads held high in dignity and joy, we were even told, the Torah tells us, the kelev lo yecheratz l'shono. A dog did not bark. Can you imagine? Even a dog did not bark. Here's the Torah's specifying again, they were lions. The dogs were submissive. The dogs of Egypt never barked when the Jews left Mitzrayim because they were lions. They left like lions. Indeed not, for the dog knew we were made of different metal, that we were crouching like lions. But soon in the desert, our people lost this leonine quality as the loneliness and the leanness of freedom in an uncharted desert took its toll. In the hunger and solitude and fear of the unknown, the former slaves began to think back to Sir Habasar, the pot of flesh, the meat parts of Egypt, the flesh parts of Egypt, which probably never existed for them. In their fear, their minds threw up fictional illusions and false memories. Then they say, we remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. Before, they remember the flesh parts, the meat they ate in Egypt, but really, then they remember it wasn't really meat, it was fish they ate in Egypt. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. They were slaves. They forgot the beatings. They forgot the torture. They forgot the agony. They created for themselves memories of things which never were, all in an attempt to find freedom and security from the terror of the desert. So this is a canine conception. This is a dog. Instead of being lions when they came out of Egypt, they turned into dogs. And what happens is interesting. In the story of Pesach, we have an interesting halacha. When does chametz become non-chametz? When is chametz not considered chametz anymore? And the halacha is when it's not edible by a dog anymore. When the food is not edible by a dog, it's not food anymore. Toothpaste is not food. The laws of kashrut, of chametz and matzah, of course, it's a sfarik interpretation, does not apply. If things cannot be eaten by a dog, laws of food do not apply to them. So it's interesting, the dog issue is also part of the halakha of the laws of Pesach. Only in the laws of Pesach you find that if the food cannot be eaten by a dog, it's not chametz. You don't find it any other place. If the food is not edible by a human being, then usually it's allowed. On Pesach we go to a lower stage. If it's not edible by a dog, then it's not chametz anymore. It's not. It's considered non-food. It's a non-food item. So it's interesting. This is a bottom limit, the symbol of that against which genuine freedom is measured. That is why Hashem told this whole generation that came out of Egypt, that turned from lions to dogs. Your bodies will fall into this desert. You're not going into Israel. You don't deserve it to go into Israel. It's interesting. This law was only against the men. The women did not. The women was Nashim Tzidkaniyot. We left Egypt because of these righteous women. And these righteous women stayed righteous right to the end. And they all came into Israel, but the men between 20 and 60, they're the ones who, unfortunately, this kazira, this decree was against them because they did not live out to be like lions. They turned into dogs. They gave up. They put their heads down and remembered they want to go back to Egypt. You want to go back to Egypt, Hashem says. You're not going into Israel. You don't deserve to go into Israel. You don't deserve to be a free nation. Now this applies to us today. The Talmud says in Brachot, on page 57b, you see a lion's den. You say a bracha. Baruch she'asah nisim lavotein makom hazeh. Say a bracha. If you see a lion's den, I've never seen a lion's den. I guess if you go to a zoo and you see a cage of lions, it's like a lion's den. Say this bracha. I don't know if anyone says this bracha. People don't even know this bracha exists. Baruch she'asah nisim lavotein makom hazeh. Thank you, Hashem, for making miracles for us in this place. Why? Where did Hashem make miracles for us in a den of lions? The answer is Daniel. The story of Daniel. He was cast into a lion's den and he came out safe. This is before the story of Purim. Just before the story of Purim. I want to suggest another meaning. When one sees a pride, and you know, it's called a pride of lions. A family of lions is called a pride of lions. A den of lions must thank God for the miracles performed for our ancestors. We must praise Hashem for having endowed our people with the quality of this lion, for having given us even the infancy of our history when we left Egypt as a band of disorganized slaves, and with the blessing of this courage of a lion, having graced Jews throughout history, Hashem graced us throughout history with the ability to rise from the crouching of a dog to the crouching of a lion. It is this quality of the lion that has given us Pesach, Zaman Cheruteinu, the time of our freedom. And therefore, a person who sees the den of lions must bless Hashem, who gave us this pride in ourselves. Bezrat Hashem, we will have this pride in ourselves. Pride in being an Israeli, having an army, having an air force, having a people who could defend us. Bezrat Hashem, we will have this pride again, fight like lions against all our enemies and overcome. And just like in the old days where Hashem redeemed us from Egypt, Hashem will redeem us from all our troubles.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.